Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're very welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show in the hot seat for a limited time only. Today is Mr. John Molloy.
Hey Keith, how you doing?
Hey buddy.
Good you're to
getting,
see you.
You're getting away one today.
Listen, any day I get to see you, it's a great day.
How's your week been?
Very good, yeah. I was over in Manchester for a couple of days with some
buddies,
good mates, yeah, from home.
How'd you get on?
Great. We took in the Preston game, as promised.
As promised. Go on then, give me the full
it was one all. It was one all, it was against Rotherham.
Yeah.
Preston are in like 19th in the table, Rotherham are 21st.
Struggling, yeah.
So probably two sides not feeling great about life. But I mean, it was really enjoyable. It was good, you know. Deepdale's a lovely stadium.
The first time you were there?
Yeah. Deepdale's a nice stadium.
I liked playing there, yeah.
Yeah.
I did like playing there.
They've just done a good job. It's intimate. There were 11,000 there. There were 700 Rotherham fans who were down at one end.
Yeah.
And then there was 11,000, which I'm told is kind of like your minimum attendance that they get.
Yeah.
And then Leeds might bring 5,000 the odd time or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was good, you know. I was saying to Kev, actually, one of the things which really struck me about it, and it's a point that Kev has made before when we sometimes give out about, well, why don't players do it for Ireland in a big way. It struck, and Kev has made this point, but it really struck me watching it how low-key the whole thing was. You know, it wasn't a massive crowd. There were not many media there. There's not much scrutiny on the build-up. Mm. And even afterwards, it's kind of, you know, a few quick interviews, in and out. Not a big deal. The world does not come to a stop, you know. And then it must be a big change for the likes of Callum Robinson in particular now,
yeah,
and Alan Brown and Shawnee Maguire and these lads coming over to a week of national media attention.
Oh, the spotlight is huge.
And it really struck me. I mean, Kev has made this point before. He's saying you don't understand. He said even in lower Premier League level, you don't get much personal scrutiny. You're in, you're out.
Yeah.
Like Callum Robinson, who was one of the best players on the pitch, if not the best player on the pitch. Yeah, I'll give you the best players in a sec, are the Irish lads. But he did miss a chance actually late on, which could have won the game. And he did everything right. You know, there's a ball, he was at the back post and defender committed himself and he sort of peeled off, took it on his chest, defender was out of it, on his left foot, maybe a bit of an angle, left-hand side of the goal. But it was a kind of tame side-footed effort straight at the keeper. Like, he should have walloped it. He should have done something with it. Now, look, the people of Preston have moved on. It hasn't been talked about for days on end. They probably have another game
coming
up.
That's where it is, though, isn't it? Yeah. You're right, and it's interesting. You look at that then in a different light. Kev's right. Even lower Premier League, unless it's one of a local derby, or if it's a game on the telly when you have to do more media.
Yeah.
Like in the main, you don't really get tests. You get interview like requests, just
back
them off, just in and out, going about your business. Obviously, the spotlight goes on when it comes to results. If you both ways, if it's good, you get more. Obviously, if it's not so good, the spotlight is on you. But I think you're right. And then when those lads, and we've got Callum coming on the show a little bit later, it's very, very different for them.
Very different. That really struck me. It was just a low-key, low-pressure, you know, October.
Yeah.
This will be ancient history very soon. Nothing.
And
kind of
that was the third game in the space of 7 days. It's that shows the kind of relentless nature off the back of an international break. So they come back maybe Wednesday, Thursday, into the first game, Saturday, Tuesday. You came and went to that game on Saturday, so it's just 100 miles
and
out.
They've already forgotten that game. Yeah,
gone. You have to.
So Callum Robinson,
the Irish lads do.
Callum Robinson was playing high left of a front three.
Okay.
Preston were on top more often than not in the game, and they took the lead.
Rotherham dropped off, I presume.
Preston took the lead. Rotherham dropped off a lot. Rotherham nicked an equaliser from a corner then, and they were delighted to kill the game.
Yeah.
You know, the gap between throw-ins and kick-outs got very long. I mean, they were just delighted to come with the draw. Robinson was really good. He's faster than the majority of the players on the pitch out there at that level. He beat men more than a few times. He always got his cross in, and a lot of them didn't. Like, there's a lot of very average play, as I'm sure you know.
There's
a lot of blocked crosses or a lot of nothing passes. Robinson, every time he got the ball, really almost every time, he did something very productive. Mm. Like, he was the best player on the pitch, maybe bar the fella I'd never heard of before, Ben Pearson.
Yeah, he's very good.
In midfield.
Very good. Came from Man United.
Yeah. Ben Pearson looked to me like a 34-year-old on the way down.
Knows how, but he's only 24, 25.
I couldn't believe that. Kev said that to me yesterday, and
he uses the ball very well as position, and he's got a bit of tenacity.
He does, yeah, really, really good. You'd keep an eye out for him, yeah. Ben Pearson. He's like skinning long hair, number four, middle
That's
of the pitch.
That's why Kev likes him.
Yeah, every time he got the ball, it was, you know, pumping passes forward or little Cruyff turns or just they're a real playmaker. But the other Irish lads, Alan Brown, just. The game passed him by.
Did it?
That'd be the cruel thing to say.
Okay.
You know, he certainly tried and he was getting involved here.
I'd say that's unusual for him.
Unusual.
Normally affects games regardless of way. And I think that's something that Callum Robinson as well, the position that he picks up, obviously young players as well, that he can drift in and out of games. When I look at him, he always affects the game.
Well, it was noticeable they went to Robinson whenever they
could. More often than not. Yeah.
So the first half, the left-hand side was on the far side of the pitch to us. And it was a bit frustrating. It was all down the left. Yeah. And I thought, if in the second half it's over on the far side, I won't be happy. Yeah. But everything kept coming down to him. Right. Like, so Pearson and the other lads are getting the ball. I think they sensed that Robinson was having a good day and they kept giving it to him. And then there was Richie Towell for Rotherham. Richie Towell played midfield for Rotherham. I really liked Towell when he was at Dundalk. Really want to see him do well. He was probably playing on the side that were going a bit direct. They had a big lad up front, so they lumped it up to him. So he didn't get the ball much. He was just, honestly... He was just trotting up and trotting back and trotting up and trotting back.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle for Rotherham and not in those players.
It must be. The only other one then to mention is Shawnee Maguire came on somewhere kind of 65 minutes territory. Really good. Really, really good. Looked actually not a class above necessarily, but definitely an injection of pace and cuteness. Do you know what he had actually more than anything? He doesn't have like 40-yard Stephen Gerrard kind of
10,
power 15 running.
15-yard sharp movements.
Really sharp.
Yeah. And he was bright.
Yeah.
Bright,
he was making really good runs. You know, I think he spotted Robinson was on top.
Yeah.
So then he started peeling off and making good runs between the right back and the centre half. And then Robinson was there and trying to create an overload.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting him behind and laying the back to Robinson. So really good.
I like him.
Yeah,
I think he'll probably get up to speed nicely before the next international break, which will be handy. Delighted to be joined on the line by Preston North End and Republic of Ireland, Callum Robinson. Callum, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Listen, I want to start with you as a U-team player. Saved your apprenticeship at Villa. I just want to paint the picture for people who might not know entirely about you. Villa's academy, it's produced a lot of players. How were those days for you as a U-team player coming through there?
Yeah, no, it was really good and really enjoyable. I started out there when I was 8 years old and worked my way up on 2-year contracts, what you get at them times. So worked my way up all the way through. And then I struggled around under 14s times. I wasn't growing and I got given an extra year and a half just through, there was a coach called Sean Verity at the time, and he was like, he's seen something in me, kept me on for another year and a half, and then over that year and a half, I excelled, I grew quite a bit, and then got to under 16s. I was playing up with the under 18s, and got my scholarship and a year pro, which was good. Obviously, playing up with the older, I was playing in the youth cup, etc. And then when I got to under 18s, I was with Tony McAndrew, who really helped me. He's quite strict, but it was, you need that. I look back and you need that when when I was like 17, 18. Then I started playing up with the reserves with Kevin McDonald, playing with some real good players. And them days it was reserve league, so you're playing with three or four probably first teamers who aren't getting in the squad at the time. So, it was good.
You served a good apprenticeship, haven't you? Like, by the sounds of that, I knew you'd come through a bit of a... The way Villa's academy works, and especially with Kevin McDonald, with the 23s coach, stroke reserve coach, they do instil those kind of old-school qualities, maybe. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely. And now I look back, at 23 years old, I look back and now you realise how much they had a part in me playing now at a real good level. As you said, off the pitch, you was always a little bit looking over your shoulder because they was on you so much. But at the end of the day, it definitely helped me on and off the pitch. The work ethic. Kevin McDonald used to do power hours on a Saturday morning, and at the time you're thinking, well, all the fitness intervals and stuff. But in the end of it, I got. I got up to the top with the first team at a young age. I was 18 when I was in the first team, so it was obviously it all was worth it when I look back now. Definitely, yeah.
The next step then, and I'm a big fan of the next step you made. So you go out and you're in the big bad world of the Football League. So very difficult to gatecrash the first team at Villa, especially when they're in the Premier League. Big finances that they can go and buy players. So you go out and you start to earn your corn in the Football League. Tell us a little bit how difficult that was when you started to make those first few strides in the Football League.
Yeah, well, at the time, I think I played from, say, around December till the end of one of the seasons in the Prem, like on the bench, and as you said, I got my 5 appearances. And then it got to the next pre-season, and I didn't feel like I was going to be obviously used as much. And I just saw, I remember sitting in the office with Paul Lambert, and he said, you can obviously stay and be around it again on the bench. And I just thought, I'd done that for, which was a great experience, but I'd done it for like 6 months the season before and only made 5 sub appearances. So then I just said, I'd like to go on loan. I'd want to go play. And I remember at the time I was like, to my agent, I wanted to go to the Championship. And now I look back and it was the best decision, obviously, to go to League One. I don't think I probably would have been fully ready for a Championship. But I think when you're young, you believe in yourself. And then I went to Preston, obviously, Preston North End on loan in League One. I think I got about 28 appearances. And then that season, obviously, we went up. And it was good to really, good to be around. As you said, you're around the team, you're in the first team dressing room. It was quite hard, obviously, on the pitch because you're playing against men, and now I look back and how my game's developed as well in the positions I was getting. I'll stay out wide a little bit more then and just think about 1v1s where now I like to get myself in pockets, etc. So but it was the best thing the best thing I've done, because then in the end I signed for Preston North End on the back of my loans there. So it was a great decision for me, and any young kid what comes in on loan at our place now, I always say, is the best thing you'll do is get in men's football as early as possible.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. I'm with you. Absolutely. I've done the exact same thing myself. And that year that you were speaking about, that promotion year, you had to show different traits. I was at MK Dons that year, and I remember playing against you in a couple of the big games. And yous were favourites to go up automatically. Didn't quite happen. Yeah. We nipped yous. But then the character then you've shown to get promoted, and then the way the club has gone from that. I know this season's been a little bit more difficult, but I think that's only because the bar that you've set at the club is very, very high. But your form has very much gone with the way the team has gone in the last few years. It must be very satisfying to see that kind of upward trajectory that you've been on.
Yeah, it's been great. As I said, there's been players who are still around, even like the likes of Galley, the skipper Clarkey. And then at the time, obviously, me and Brownie were like really young, and it's nice. And Daniel Johnson, still lads there. There's still a core there where we've developed and went forward with the club. And it was a great season that we've done it in the end. And then to get into the Championship, and then I come back on loan there that Christmas of the first year in the Champ. And yeah, it's just been going more positive and up as the years have been going on. Obviously, a little bit disappointed at the moment considering how we ended last season. But what we did last season and what everyone always says about the budgets and stuff like that was, if we could have nicked that playoffs, it would have been obviously unbelievable. But we got some real good players, and as you said, myself personally, I've developed as well as the team over the last 2-3 years, definitely.
Every step you've taken up, you've done it kind of, I know it probably hasn't been easy, but it certainly looked easy. And, League One, Championship nearly to the playoffs last year, the team did really, really well. The bar was set very, very high. Then this year, international football. Tell us a little bit about, because I don't think a lot of people realise, how has it come about? Is it your grandmother's from Monaghan, is that right?
Monaghan, yeah. So basically, it's kind of funny because when I was under 15s, I was going to come and play. I was going to play for Ireland in 2 games against Hungary, and basically they couldn't find my grandma's details, because basically my grandma passed away when my mum was 9. So it was one of them where my mum's sort of like stuck, and my granddad remarried, so it was kind of like hard. And I think under 15s people sort of give up a little bit early. And to be fair to Mark O'Toole, he was helping a lot, and in the end we just couldn't get it. But then I think it was about a couple of seasons ago, and I really wanted to do it, and my mum was like pushing me to do it, but I was a little bit in between being in the championship, a lot of games, and my body was still obviously growing, and developing, it was like, do I put it out there that I want to? And it was like that for a couple of years, and then my good friend Fads, and I spoke to him, and I was just like, I really want to do it. I'm really interested. And I spoke to Brownie, obviously, at the club, and then Shawnee Maguire come in, and they was just like, do it. It would be obviously great for you and great for the country, etc. Yeah. And then I think it was last March, I just put an article out saying that I really wanted to have done an interview. And then obviously from there, I played in the Celtic testimonial. The gaffer rang me and just said like he'd like me to get around the boys. And then I was just waiting on my passport. And then, as you've said, the last couple of months now I've been involved, and I've loved literally every minute of it. The lads are great. Staff are great, and I'm really enjoying it, genuinely enjoying it. And as I said, like for my, especially for my mum, it's obviously proud every time I step out and play. So it's annoying that obviously it didn't go through when I was younger, but at least I got there in the end. So.
Yeah, so it's a combination of obviously the family background, your mate Kieran Fadden who put us in touch as well, so we should thank him for that, and also the Preston Mafia. Were all the Irish players there urging you to push on? So tell us a little bit about the step up. So we keep on talking about League One, Championship, one of the top players in the Championship, your goals, the positions you're picking up, getting lots of plaudits, and rightly so. Tell us about the step up then to international football. How did you find that?
Yeah, I've actually been enjoying it, but it's obviously disappointing with the results we're getting at the moment, but I've really enjoyed it because you're playing with some real good players, do you know what I mean? And I've actually genuinely been enjoying it. I think the difference between obviously I would say Championship and the international football, if you lose the ball, you don't get it back as quick because the level and the players that you're playing with, playing against are very good, and you're playing with some very quality professionals. So it's one of them where you have to look after the ball when you have it. But yeah, I'd say definitely I've really been enjoying it, and in training I've loved it, and I've just tried to be as confident and as positive as possible, and hopefully that's obviously shown in some of the games and little bits I've had game time that I've tried to show obviously the manager and the staff and the lads as well, because sometimes, you know, as a player, you've got to get respect off the players first before anything. And I think now I'm slowly obviously getting my feet with international football, and I've just been really enjoying it. Yeah, definitely.
I think you have been. Look, we know it's been a tough time over the last year or so with results, certain performances as well. But I think with the assets that you have, I would only imagine that the players are absolutely taking you on board, because with the type of pace, the power that you have, we need that type of player in amongst the squad. And I think you've settled into it really well, and the fans have really taken to you. Tell me a little bit about your best position. So you said about Preston, you went there, it was more 1v1 in wide areas. We've seen you playing as a striker for Ireland. What is your best position? What's your favourite position?
I always get asked this, and it's sometimes now I'm getting older, and I think I'd literally love just to say I'm a striker, or I'm a 10, or I'm a winger. But I just literally now I've sort of found a position where I've been playing on the left a lot, but I'm not really playing on the left, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm playing as a left striker, if you get what I mean. In certain games, I'm playing as a striker, but slash on the left side, where I can still have my 1v1s and get out players, but then if you see most of my goals this season, they're in striker's positions, they're in the 6-yard box, where that's where I get most of my goals, and that's being in a striker's position, but then I'm not playing as a striker. So it's one of them where wherever I am in that attacking area in the final third, I always just want to be getting on the ball, etc. It doesn't mean if I'm up front or on the wing or wherever. Like I'm not just saying that obviously to keep marks open. Mm. Literally now, you know when you get to an age, you want to know exactly. But as long as I'm in them areas and I'm making sure that I'm in the box as a striker when the ball's getting in the box, but then sometimes I might drop into pockets, as I've just said there, and pick up the ball on a half turn. So literally anywhere in that final third, I enjoy just being around in every attack, basically.
Callum, I think as long as you keep on that upward trajectory, you're going to be absolutely fine and be a big part of what both Preston and Ireland do. You've got Ipswich on Saturday. Wish you good luck at that, and hopefully we'll touch base soon, pal.
Oh, thank you very much. Cheers to you.
Delighted to be joined in studio by a former teammate of mine for both club and countries, Keith Tracy. Keith, thanks for coming in.
No problem, bud.
Time you got a little bit lost on the way.
Yeah, I was nearly in Aviva at one point, but we got here in the end.
Found your way over.
Desperate to get back on that pitch. I'm walking over there, man.
Right, before we get into the nitty gritty, I want to bring you right back, because something I'm quite passionate about is underage football, grassroots. We would have had similar type of upbringings in terms of the DDSL.
Yeah.
You obviously came from Sheriff Street, played for Belvo. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about DDSL and the upbringing and the kind of apprenticeship it gave you. Did you think it was a good competitive league to give you that basis to go to England?
I always enjoyed playing for Belvedere. It's because there's so many teams within Dublin, you know, when you're in school, your mates always play for the local teams as well. So you're constantly fighting with your mates, and Belvedere was never the best team at my age, but it was a team that I was invested in and my family were invested in. So even though I was from Sherry Street were starting to come on the up, and there was numerous opportunities to go to Sherry Street, but I loved at Belvedere, and they always looked after me. Even when I was leaving to go to England, they were always in touch, and always, even now, I still get a birthday card off the manager. Yeah, I do. So
who was your manager?
A fella called Gerard Mooney.
Right.
And he still keeps in touch. He's like a family friend now, so I think I was quite lucky.
Was Vinnie Buller still involved? So that says we were a different team. Maybe,
I'm not sure what Vinny's doing. Vinny's he's a family friend of me nanny and granddad's, and they sort of keep in touch with him, this and that. I know he done an interview the other day about underage football himself and had a bit of a
thing. I think
he is
still
that.
Involved. I've seen games and
I haven't seen Vinny in years.
And he would have been one of the managers who I would have been coming up against. I was Stella Mars, and obviously they were a bit of a rival. But in terms of that kind of attention that you got from across the water, there was a real interest from Celtic at one stage, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, I was actually in Parkhead, ready to sign. I had the contract in front of me, my whole family with me. And the only reason I didn't sign, Tommy Burns was there at the time. And
what age were you then?
I was
12, 13?
No, I was young. I was a little bit older. They did try and get me at 13, but we kept around. I was too young, even my mum and dad knew. I think this was around 14, just maybe 15. But I wanted to stay in the digs. I had Darren O'Dea, had a couple of Irish lads there, and he had a snooker table, and I was quite shy, so I was like, as long as I get into that house, I'll be fine. Mm. And at the last minute, they literally tapped me on the shoulder and said, that house won't be ready for 6 months, but you'll be straight in after 6 months. Right. And I gave one look to my mother, and she went, she's not happy. Oh, he's not happy. And that was the end of it. Never turned back, and then Blackburn came in, and she was quite happy with Blackburn, my mother, again, because
of the dig situation.
Yeah, it was like Emmerdale Farm. There was nowhere to get in trouble. That was actually her word, you won't get in trouble here. So, I fell in there.
So were Blackburn in the equation from the off, or did that just happen after Celtic?
No, Blackburn were always number one, so to say, but with Scotland not having a youth system, I was going to be on £300 a week at 14, 15.
Yeah.
That was more money than my dad was pulling in, so we were like, I was going to go for it just for that reason, just for the money, and thank God I didn't, because I think I would have been quite limited on what happened in my career if I had gone up there.
Yeah. So, similar to myself, I think, junior cert, bang, straight over. Gone. Were you homesick? How did it work? Because when I went over at 15, literally after the junior cert, I had a family holiday in Galway for 4 or 5 days, and then straight over. Joined the pre-season a year younger, because in England obviously the education system's a little bit the GCSEs are a year later, so we would have been a year younger. I was quite fortunate. I joined with 5 Irish lads, so there was 5 of us that were kind of thick as thieves. Robbie Keane was one. The other lads didn't go on to make it, unfortunately. But you had something similar at Blackburn, and it was a few years, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had a few of the boys, but to be fair, when I signed, they all sort of fell away, because Souness signed me. Well, not Souness, but you know, he was the manager. And we got to meet him, and I think after 2 weeks, he went to Newcastle. Mm. So that fell through. But because, like I say, when I went over, I was 15. I didn't have UEFA clearance, so I was sort of over on the hush-hush. Mm. And when the 18s had a game, if the first team didn't have a game in the weekend, if you had a Monday night game, they throw me in with the first team to train. And quickly, Mark Hughes gave me a new contract, and it all just... I just really steamrolled into a career and ended it very abruptly as well.
Tell us a little bit about those first few weeks, though. So you go over, you used to obviously living at home, living in Sheriff, playing for Belvo. And then if anybody hasn't, most people won't have, the dig situation at Blackburn, it was basically all of the U10 players were in there, weren't they? With yeah. Mary and Mick, wasn't it?
There was 16 bedrooms, two lads to a bedroom.
Yeah.
It was me and, you remember Frankie yeah, Fielding? Yeah, yeah. I was in with Frankie Bristol and City, yeah.
He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he was a good lad. He got a bit of fun time with Frankie. He had a few nicknames, didn't he? He was a bit weird, but he settled me in. Me and Frankie were roommates for the whole time. I think I lived in that house for 3 years, and then I ended up, yeah, I got my own house when I was just turning 18, so that was really shifted.
Who were the other Irish lads there at the time? Was it Gavin Cunning and
Gav was there. Younger? Gav was a little bit younger. Arden Doran came later. Alan George was, he came 6 months later. I don't know why that was. He didn't come the same time as me. He came, whether he was looking at other clubs or whatever, but remember Eddie Nolan?
Yeah, yeah.
He was there. Gavin Pearce was there. He was a little bit older, and there was a load of Duffer was there. Yeah, but like I say, he went to Chelsea Sharpish as well.
He was scared of you, that's one.
Yeah, well, Jesus, that wasn't much to live up to, was it?
Walking in. Who was the U team manager?
The U team manager was Gary Bowyer.
Ah, was he?
Yeah.
Was it Kerry Bowyer? Yeah, I thought it was Kelly. Do you remember Kelly?
He was there initially. Rob Kelly.
Rob Kelly.
Yeah, he loved
and
me.
He left.
He loved me as a winger because he was always on at me. On me, said, "Oh, we love you here. We love you." He was one of the reasons. We're like, "This fella's really nice. I'm going to come here." And again, 2 weeks later, he was out the bleeding door. So yeah, all the reasons I signed for left me straight away. So
how did you take to the training, the full time training, and the kind of the rigour of that, going from playing probably twice a week with Belva, playing the weekend, and you might play on the streets with your mates. How did you take to that?
It was fairly easy, to be honest. Because at that age, you're not really, you know, fitness doesn't really come into at 15. You're just running around, running after a ball with your mates. And when I first went over, I wanted to prove something to the English players because they've been in academies longer than me and they've all come through. And, you know, the under-15s Blackburn players walked around with a bit of a swagger, whereas I was under-15s Belvedere just coming over. So we always felt like I had a bit to prove, so we'd always trained a little bit harder and you know, leave a bit on the English lads and just let them know that, you know, just because I've come from Dublin doesn't mean I'm any less good a player as you. And that was always the bit I had between my teeth, and, you know, we got on to win that left later, I suppose.
Yeah. So when you went over then, I remember I was a little bit the same. That was five Irish lads I went over with, and there was a couple of older ones there as well. We used to have five-a-sides against the English lads, and there was that little bit of niggle between the two. I don't think the manager particularly helped by constantly putting us on the same teams. He used to do Ireland versus England and all the rest of it. So there was that element of little bit of niggle. The other area I wanted to speak to you was, Conor Clifford's done a good article recently in an interview, and he was speaking about the pressure of having to have the Louis Vuitton wash bag, having to have, and I remember even going back to my time, the certain type of runner, the certain type of trainer, there was that little bit of pressure. Was that something that was evident at Blackburn?
It was evident, yeah. It passed me over. I'm sure you remember. I was getting called a pikey and all sorts, but I lived in the digs, so I only ever come down in a pair of shorts, you know, ready to go into my training gear. So I sort of avoided all that stuff, but it was evident. I knew there's probably players before you came to Blackburn, like Jamal Johnson, and there was people like that that just, they'd go out and bike. Like, I bought a Range Rover at 17. I didn't even have a driver's license or anything like it. And it's just them things, you're trying to be like the people around you, and yeah, you get like too much too quick.
You were 18. I went to Blackburn in August 2008. So you would have been 18 then, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
18, maybe 17.
Going I don't on know. 18. I'm not going
to pretend
I can
walk
out these
next
numbers.
Next year. So, we're born on the same day, remember?
Are you 13?
Different
yeah?
year. 13 September, yeah.
All right. Yeah, so.
Do you remember that? And Carl Robinson was as well. Remember at the time when he was at Blackburn as the coach?
No, we've never tweaked that at all, no.
Well, it's obviously a few years different, you were a bit younger. Yeah. So when I moved there, I was really aware of you as this young Irish lad coming through, and you made the comparison of, or sorry, a lot of people are making the comparison of the new Damien Duff. So moved there, And in my first game, we're playing at Upton Park, and I don't know whether you remember this, got brought on at half time, Vince Corella, who, to be fair to Vinny, I think struggled with tempo of the game and came off at half time. I've never seen anybody have so much cramp at half time in a game. His legs could not move at half time. He was on the floor.
Well, I bet his hair still looked great, didn't it?
Yeah, looked $1 million. But then you came on in that game as well. I came on at half time and then bang. So you're in and around it straight from the off. Playing, and then that was obviously Paul Ince was the manager. I think he showed a lot of belief in you, but things were flying.
Yeah.
Weren't they?
Things were flying there, but like when you came in, you obviously only seen me getting into the team, but under Mark Hughes, I was in every squad, travelling everywhere, and you know, would never get to the pitch. It was everything but getting onto the pitch. Yeah. And when Ince came in, did you play in that game against Everton? Remember the first game?
No,
of
I
the season?
It the day after.
Yeah, that was
4-1, wasn't it?
I think we were losing 1-0.
Away to Everton, wasn't it?
Yeah. The first game of the season, and I was sitting there, and somebody turned around and said, "Keith, go and warm up." And I was like, "Not bringing me on, we're losing. Like in Goodison Park, he ain't bringing me on." And he turned and said, "Keith, come on." I was like, "He's making a mistake here." I was absolutely panicking.
Did you think that really?
I was panicking because the crowd is so close. I thought if I win in 3-0, there's just a chance he'll bring me on and blood me a bit. But he showed a lot of faith in me there. And I think we ended up winning, so that was a great confidence booster for me. And I remember that West Ham game as well.
Do you?
Bellers was playing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was having a go at Lucas Neal about getting tight to me.
Yeah, yeah.
He was calling me all sorts of names while he was telling him to get tight. But yeah, that was the type of fella Bellers was as well.
So you've talked about the Range Rover, and I remember that. So I remember coming to the club and hearing loads about you, seeing it then with my own eyes, seeing how good you were, how good you could be. And then I'm looking at you some mornings and I'm thinking, you were out last night or you were out two nights on the bounce. And I'm 28 at the time, then going on 28. And look, I've been there. Look, see it. And so there's a fine line between looking at you and thinking, I don't want to be a dad here. I don't want to be like on you all the time. But then it's a fine line between that and then trying to give you some kind of guidance, some kind of advice. Yeah. And it's difficult because you've got all this potential. And I know there was a lot of the senior players trying to kind of curb you and the Range Rover story. Like, what was the Range Rover story about the lads off the bus? So you get back from an away game. You'll have to fill in the blanks here because I've heard this second, third hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Graeme Souness was the manager. It was Mark Hughes as the manager. So Mark Hughes is the manager. Mm. And At the end of the game, you get back to the stadium or the training ground, and the usual story is the staff and the young players get the stuff off the bus, the kit, the skips, all the rest of it. And as Mark Hughes looks around, you're whizzing past in your Range Rover.
I honestly don't remember. It sounds like something I'd have done, but not. I wouldn't have done it on purpose. I wouldn't have done, I'm too good for this. I probably played and thought, I don't have to do it today because I played. Yeah. It would have been something like that, but obviously I had that bit of arrogance about me and people probably rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way at the time. But
I think it was more frustration. I don't think it was arrogance. I think it was frustration. And I think everybody was probably in the same boat as me, staff members, and not just coaching staff. Like the medical staff at Blackburn was quite tight around that time, and they'd try and chip in and try and give you that little bit of advice. I think the main thing was frustration because everybody could see how much quality, how much potential that you had, and it was just a case of just curbing that. So like Saturday nights, what would be the drill after the game? Was it literally full blast?
Well, Blackburn wasn't really the problem for the drinking. The drinking kicked in Preston although it was the championship, that was when I really started to kick on. I was a big fish at Preston. That was when the drinking started. Blackburn was, people expected me to do things, and I'd always do just enough of what they'd be like you say, you've seen a flash of it and you're like, oh gee, he is as good as people say, but I would never deliver it when I should. And
why do you think that was? Like when you look back, when I had early stages in my career, I had really frustrating times, and drinking culture was massive in football. And it wasn't a case of just me, it was everybody. So it was one of those. But like when I look back and in the years that have gone past, like I do look in the mirror, I do look towards managers, I do look towards senior players. Could they have helped me a little bit more? Where do you stand on it?
Jeez, I'd be cockeyed if I was trying to look at people for whose problem it was, but mostly I'd look at myself. But there's certain things, like Phil Brown, when he was manager at Preston, he didn't help. Mm. But the earliest memory I have of Blackburn is meeting Dominic Matteo and Gary Flickroft.
Yeah.
Some
senior players.
Silly bleeding hamstring injury, but I was in the gym and I ended up with them two. And there, Flicky was the captain at the time. And he said to me, never miss a night out. Never ever miss a night out, because before you know it, your career will be over. And I took him literally on that. Obviously, I shouldn't have, but at 15, you know,
what you're using impression. What do you mean, like, team bonding? Is that what he meant?
I'm not sure, but I never missed any night out. Now, whether it was drinking, go-karting, whatever it was, I was there. And it just sort of struck me, and I couldn't deal with the ups and downs of the game, so drinking was always an escape for me. And I was always young enough and fit enough to be able to have a couple of points and get away with it, have a couple of points, get away with it. But it starts, you know, you're burning the candle at both ends. It eventually will come to get you. And
so what happened at Preston? No, when did it, what you're saying, that wasn't really the time. When did it start escalating? And what happened? Was it just became a constant?
Yeah, it became a constant because I was living in between Preston and Blackpool in a place called Lytham. So if I go to Preston, I can drink till, you know, 1:30, 2:00 in a studenty place. If I go to Blackpool, I can stay up till whatever the next day if I want. So it was never really, it's a Tuesday night, I can't go out tonight. I would always go out knowing I have a recovery day the next day, but I'd be stinking a drink the next day with the booze. And yeah, Phil Brown used to, I was getting injections before every game. I wasn't training. I never ever trained at 21. I wouldn't be, but again, I seen that with, remember Rocky used to do it. He used to not train. He used to be Man Friday. He'd come out and train on Friday, scored on a Saturday. Yeah. And they were the type of people I was looking up to. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I just won't train and I'll play and turn it on and turn
obviously
it off.
Obviously, that was a different end of the spectrum. He's whatever he was.
Yeah.
Late 20s, you're 21. So, like, what were you getting injections for?
I had a double hernia that they didn't want to operate on because we were in a dogfight at the relegation end. Yeah. So, he was just getting injections and it got to the point where my arse had so many needle points in it that they had to start giving me suppositories then.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was Saturday, Tuesday, and my arse was like a dartboard at one stage. It was a joke. But that was it. I wasn't big and man enough to say, listen, I'm not playing today, because
you'd be down, players don't think that. There's got to be a duty of care as well when it comes to the medical side. And I don't know what you felt. I felt that Blackburn as well, that was probably one of the strongest medical departments in terms of they would stand up for the players' rights.
I think Dave Fever had a lot to do with that. I think he knew what he was doing. He was really, he used to ring me ma at home and all. He had that little personal touch, you know. Not an injury, you know, if I was ill and I was up in the digs, he would ring me mother and say, listen, it's only a touch of the cold, don't worry about it. Yeah, Blackburn had that little personal touch that was attracted me to him.
Speaking of your mum and your family, when this was going on at Preston in particular, when it was like you're going out Saturdays or kicking on or midweeks and all, did they have any idea?
I think they knew I was out, but what else was I going to do? They didn't want me sitting in the house getting depressed, so them saying, oh, he's out having a drink, they probably thought, oh, well, everybody's out having a drink, but, you know, they never had a footballer as a son before, so they didn't know which way to guide me. And I was telling them everything was all right, and they'd see me on the telly once a month playing half decent or getting an Ireland cap, and they'd be like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And you half the time I'd lie to myself in the mirror saying everything's fine, you know. How can things be wrong if I'm playing for Ireland and playing for Preston week in, week out?
Yeah.
And
I would have been in the same boat. I would have been similar to that in the way that you just try to make it sound like it's so, and they see you every now and again, they speak to you on the phone, and they don't really know the full extent of exactly what you're going through. Like, I wanted to knock football in the head when I was 22, 23, I'd say.
Yeah.
I nearly went to America, nearly went on a scholarship to New York and go and play over there, because I'd had enough of it.
Yeah.
I'd had enough of the culture, I'd had enough of the way I was getting treated by Wolves at the time.
Yeah.
And I've said to you as well, like, it just wasn't right for me. Just totally fell out of love with football. Didn't even want to train. It was a horrible position to be in. Did you ever get to that level?
Many, many times. Like, even when things were going well and I scored a goal, I'd wake up the next morning and go, I can't be bothered doing this. And I'm sure for people who've never played the game professionally must listen to that and go, what hell can you feel like that? But it's the ups and downs of it. Honestly, you can't, I'm sure you understand it, but people just don't understand how hard it is to do that. And, you know, imagine stacking a shelf in Tesco and somebody standing behind you saying, you know, with the awards that you use to us, it's not just, you know, the normal effing and jeffing. It's, most of it gets personal, you know. Anything that's in the media that's personal will be brought up in the crowd. And, you know, it's just, it's not really nice. And
when did the depression kick in? Like, I know you've spoke about that in the last couple of years, but and at the time you didn't, you were saying it's been, you've had it for years on and off. And like when you look back now, when do you think it started or what started it?
In the nicest possible way, what started it was probably meeting my wife to be at the time. And I was floating through life in England, you know. I was just playing games. Eventually things weren't going well for me at Barnsley, and I didn't have the bite between my teeth to get myself going again. I couldn't kickstart myself, and my wife and the kids were at home. I was like, this just isn't weighing up here for me. The cons were outweighing the pros all of a sudden, and we were playing Preston at home in Deepdale, so I was allowed to stay at home on Christmas Day. And I woke up Boxing Day, and there was blood all over the sitting room floor. Like, and the taxi driver who was coming to get me to bring me to the game, was like, he wanted to ring me ma and dad. It was like blood. And I got up and got dressed, got cleaned myself up and went to do the warm up. And he put me on the bench, thank God. I thought I was actually due to play. As I turned, we were doing little sprints, and as I turned the sprint, the stadium just started to turn black and black. I couldn't see. And I made some excuse that I had a flu or something and went in, and he told me to sit behind the bench. And I rang my wife like on the sly behind the bench, and that was it. We went home that day. I didn't even tell the club. They actually sent me letters 6 months later saying, you've been sacked and blah, blah, but this was 6 months ago. And that's the life of a footballer. It's up and down and up and down.
Didn't help you at all, though, to try and deal with that? There's a lot made as well about the PFA. Now, I don't want to be too critical of them, but I think they're very reactive. They're not proactive.
Yeah.
So if something comes out, they'll jump on that.
Yeah.
Did they do anything to try and help?
It was somebody from the PFA. Clark Carlisle tried to help me a lot, but it wasn't in the PFA capacity, if you know what I mean. It was as a mate, because I played with him at Burnley, and he was coming over to Preston at the time. And I see myself and Clarky a lot now. So the only person I would listen to was Clarky, and he had a great way about him. He was really such a nice fella, and the way he spoke to me really opened my eyes. But there was still a little blip after Clarky that I had to get over. And I think you really have to hit that rock bottom, and you have to either say, am I going to get straight and keep going, or am I just going to try and live my life? And I remember, did you ever play with Wayne Henderson?
Yes.
I remember he came into my house in Lytham crying one day after a Preston game. He was on the bench, and he just slammed a whiskey bottle down, and he's like, I don't think I'll be able to pick my kids up when they're born. He hasn't got any kids. But because his back was so bad, he started sobbing. And I was like, this is a grown man crying. Like, picking your kids up is more important than playing a game of football to me, and it always will be. So when I seen Hendo doing that, I was thinking and thinking, if I keep drinking and keep playing here, and I couldn't stop the drinking at the time, so I kept drinking and playing. But eventually I got to a good enough place where, you know, I haven't drank since November now. So
you're nearly a year off.
Nearly a year off, yeah. Christmas is coming up, so who knows? No, everything's, this is 3 years of therapy later, you know, to get all this stuff out. And like I say, I like talking about it now, because I think it's a lot of people need to hear this. Yeah, well, did you know any about the stuff when you went over? It's all rose, and you're going to be a
professional footballer. It's got to help you. Like, it's got to be beneficial for you. And I think, like, I read the article a few weeks ago in the Herald, and I felt so bad that I should have done more. I could have done more to try and help you when I was at Blackburn, but then don't realise to the extent, and then you go off and you're playing at Burnley, you're playing at Preston, and obviously I'm not seeing you on a daily basis then.
Well, although I was a child, it's nobody's duty to mind me there when we're on the football pitch. And but that was it. What did we train from 10:30 till 12:30, and I'd be back in my house at 12:30, and you know what, $2,500 a week sitting in a house. What are you going to do at 17, 18? There's only one thing on my mind. And unfortunately, it was on my mind till I was a lot older to reverse what I'd done to my body.
What's the plan now? So is it a constant battle to try and stay on top of this with the people you have around now, good people? You just mentioned your wife, you just had a baby as well.
It's not a battle anymore. At the start, it was a battle, but at the start, I didn't realise I was trying to give up drink. I thought I was just, I'll give it 2 weeks if I can. And, you know, you start to stretch it and stretch it and stretch it. And before I knew it, I'm sitting here, I'm nearly a year off, and I have no ambition to go back to it at all.
No ambition to go back to drinking. What about football?
If you're
not playing at the moment, eh?
Not playing at the moment, but
if you put that in a box, like you were saying, and you're kind of saying, that's just not important. Not important anywhere near as much as the family side of things and what you want to do.
Yeah, well, like I say, we only had a little boy 2 weeks ago, so giving football another thought, I would love to play, but I'd love to play for like Sherry Street or East Wall, just on an amateur thing and just
to enjoy,
just have a bit of laugh again, and not, you know, people going, oh, your touch was poor there, or you should have pressed there. Just forget the tactics and have a game of football.
Like, you remember the last time you played football and you enjoyed it?
I don't think I ever enjoyed a professional game of football. It's more...
Even Ireland?
Even Ireland was... It was more nerve-wracking to think what could go wrong rather than what could I actually go and achieve here. It was, right, just keep it steady, just don't do anything stupid here, Keith. And that's always what I wanted to do, was just, right, don't do anything stupid rather than actually going and
kicking
on.
Whereas your game is the total opposite of that. You had the attributes to be the game-changer. You were the, like...
Yeah,
the duff, you know, like with those type of qualities. So, like, to imagine that you were even thinking that kind of the game, because if I was with you and you were playing regular, I'd be like literally wanting to get you the ball to win us games. But you were thinking, don't do anything wrong.
Well, I think a lot of that could have been to do with Trapp as well. He was that way minded, especially with his wingers. He didn't want to leave the defensive side to expose, but. Yeah, I was always like that. It was always, and I know when I come on against Argentina, I done okay. I went past Zabaleta a few times, but people made a big thing about that. Like, oh, you've just skinned Zabaleta. At the time, he was an aging man, and I was coming into my prime, and, well, my prime, what was it, 21 or something? Mm. But, yeah, it did turn out to be my prime, didn't it? Yeah, but I don't think I enjoyed it. I actually got, the first thing I did after that game was go down and give my granddad my jersey, because it was his birthday and he was down in Ringsend. So I walked from the Aviva to, just like I did today, back down to my granddad and gave him the jersey. And it was more, I was really proud to be able to give him my jersey rather than like enjoying the game of football itself. I was, did you enjoy football games?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. You seem surprised. I did, and
you
definitely enjoyed it.
You were always a very angry man on the pitch you were.
Yeah, that's the way I played. That's the way I played. I was really highly strung, and I was really, you'd probably testify to this, a few of the other lads have said, I was always moaning and shouting and screaming. And
yeah.
But I loved that battle side of it. Whereas I had different qualities to you. So what I felt like that side of my game would get the best out of you if I got you at it and was giving you the ball and scrapping in midfield and doing certain things. It depends what club I was at. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. And with Ireland, it was just loved every second of it.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong, I was extremely proud and all that stuff. I was delighted to do it, but did I actually enjoy the game? Not particularly, no.
So when you look back now, where would you change it? What point do you think then I should have changed it? So again, like certain parallels, I spoke to you about, I was willing to give up football, didn't like it. I had to get out of Wolverhampton. I went to Hull, hated Hull. I felt like I was living in Russia. It was like the far end of the bleeding earth. It was ridiculous. So it wasn't until I went to MK Dons that I actually fell back in love with football again. You were speaking about, I just want to go and enjoy football. That's where I started to enjoy football again, and it was from then. Whereas could have easily, you know, if that didn't go well, just fall out. And what was I then? I was 25 maybe.
Well, I think that happened to me Preston to a certain extent, but even when I left Blackburn, do you remember when I crashed my car? You were training that day, right? And Sam Allardyce wouldn't even speak to me. He sent me in, and Dr. Batty had to break me the news. Get out and blah, blah. But some of the things that went on, like behind the scenes, young Irish 15-year-old will never know these things. And like, how do you speak? There's nobody there. Like, remember, our own hands used to do it, but there's nobody there. And I think there is a real
need for that.
There is a need for somebody to speak to them and just
to advise.
Say, listen, if you're not the next Damien Duff, don't worry about it. I, like, There's somebody going into your ma and dad at 13 saying, this fella's going to be the next name in Duff, there's going to be millions. Like, I remember my ma looking at houses out in Bray, and like, that's the sort of pressure that's getting thrown on you. Like, inadvertently now, like, they weren't doing it on purpose, but these little things are just on your back, and you're like, I'm trying to just have a game of football here, and it goes out of it, the fun goes out of it with the professionalism.
Listen, we could go on talking about this forever. I'm glad you're looking well. I'm glad things are going well in terms of being off the drink. Stay strong, all right?
Yeah, of course.
It's been a pleasure. Delighted to say I've got John Williams on the phone. Covers all the Bournemouth games. Bumped into you at the weekend, John. We've met each other a couple of times, but Saturday was the first time we met properly at the Fulham-Bournemouth game on Saturday when they were so impressive. It's going very, very well, isn't it, at the moment for Bournemouth?
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody over there. It is going really well for us. We've hit a vein of form that we've never quite had in the Premiership. You know, we'll talk about Fulham first, and it was a really good performance, clinical finishing. The KFC, as I call them, Kingy, Fraser and Callum,
yeah,
are absolutely outstanding. They've got enormous pace and strength, and they're a real threat every time we play somebody. Fulham in particular, I thought, you know, they had a lot of possession, but really didn't hurt us too much goalkeeper-wise, not many shots at all for them. You know, they're going to have to adjust to life in the Premiership. And then Eddie makes 8 changes last night. The most interesting thing about it was, though, he played 3 of the lads who played on Saturday, you know, and that's quite unusual, you know, to Cookie Francis.
Charlie Daniels, was it?
And Charlie Daniels, yeah. He left Aki out, of course, which would have made it even stronger. But Norwich were very impressive, and Eddie wasn't at all happy with performance. But, you know, when you win and you're not playing too good, I think it's about momentum sometimes. And when I've been in that sort of row of games myself, you expect to win, you know, no matter what happens. And that was the case last night.
I think that sums things up quite nicely, doesn't it? The fact that win 3-0 at a team like Fulham on Saturday, okay, they've got their problems, then you come into a cup game and you're not quite happy with the level of performance. But if you flip that to where yous were in the last 10, 15, 20 years, you must have to pinch yourself with the troubles that the club has been through. Obviously, you've been in and around it for such a long time. You've seen this journey that the club has been on. It's quite staggering, isn't it?
It's a football miracle. It really is. I still pinch myself now. I keep looking at the league table and thinking, my dear, how have we got this far? But it's all down to Eddie and the work he puts in, the staff he has around him, good people around him, the tactical decisions he makes. Probably one of the bigger concerns is at some stage somebody's going to test the water with Eddie. I'm sure, you know, he's had a go at Burnley and being up north. I can't see him going that way again. You know, he's a pretty homely boy, and he loves Bournemouth. And if there is anybody loyal in football anymore, it's Eddie Howe. And I can honestly see him sticking with us. But you never know, do you? You know, if some of the big boys come in, I'm thinking London, I don't know, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, any of them, then it might just be one of them situations that he feels, I've got to take it. I don't know for sure.
Do you think that time, John, at Burnley may well have tainted the way he thinks about that? Or do you think geographically it'll pay a big, be a big factor in his decision if, when that comes along? You had something similar, didn't you? When you were at Port Vale and Harry got on the phone just about to move to Holmes Chapel, was that something in the back of your mind that you didn't really want to uproot?
Well, no, I didn't want to go, but then I came down and I spoke to Harry, and he'd done the number that we, even when I was assistant manager, we continue to do today. When we bring players down and we're trying to sign them, we make sure that the schools, housing, we take them on the beach, we show them how beautiful it is. You know, Tony Pulis always used to say, we used to sign the wife sometimes, not the player. It was really making them feel like they could make a home down here. And I think that's the case with Eddie. I think those northern boys can come south, but I don't think the southerners go north so well, you know, not unless there's a vast amount of money in it and they can't say no. So there could be something in that. He's had a taste of up north. I don't personally think he would go that way again, unless it was a big club. Who knows? He's never seen that in football. But at this moment in time, I think he's really happy with the way things are going. And I've never seen him that quite so happy and animated after the Fulham game. Usually he's always very calm and collective, but there was a little edge to his voice that was saying, yeah, we're not bad, you know. We're not a bad side.
Yeah, I see, and I spoke to you on Saturday in the press lounge, and I mentioned this to you, that the last time I seen you play live was the first game of the season against Cardiff. Going back maybe last year, I've seen you probably 5-6 times, some at home, some away. So every time I see the team, there seems to be that little bit of progression in the way you're going forward. There's a real kind of togetherness, but it's that continuity with the way he plays. And I was very surprised, and I don't know what you thought of actually playing a back three on Saturday. We got the team in, and I just thought with the settled back 4-4-1-1 or 4-4-2, whatever you want to put it. And I know Josh King was missing on Saturday, but even going to that back three, which I don't think particularly worked last season on the couple of times I seen it, again, Saturday, not a problem. And it's a testament to the work he clearly does on the training ground and how well those players are buying into it.
Yeah, I think you've did it right. You've nailed it there. Every signing that he's made, going back to last season with Jermaine Begovic, them sorts of people, we've got a little bit better each time. And now he's done it again with Jefferson Lerma, who's come in and has really been outstanding. You know, he had a couple of early games where he was getting used to things, and he got a couple of bookings, and that was a concern I thought I would have later on. But he's tightened his tackling side of his game up, and his distribution is good. He breaks things up. He's excellent defensively in front of that back four or the three centre-halves, whichever way you play it. And he has definitely made us better. So if Eddie can keep doing that and gradually keep making it even better, who knows where you end up. But at this moment in time, things are looking very good, and everybody's extremely happy here at Bournemouth, I can assure you. We've got the cup draw this evening. We're looking forward to that. You know, there's some big, big teams, of course, to play, and who knows which way the draw will go. But if we could get a bit lucky, perhaps a home game, you know, Burton would be lovely.
Yeah.
You would think we could give them a good game. So we'll wait and see how the draw goes.
Yeah. You mentioned about the recruitment side of things has impressed me. He's gone in a different way in the last 2-3 windows, maybe, where it has been concise. Even this summer, Brooks, Lerma coming in, and I'm with you. That was the first time I've seen him live properly, looking at him off the ball, the positions he picks up, the little steel that he brings to the heart of the midfield. Maybe a little bit different than what you already have in there with the likes of Gosling, Surman, who have all done very, very well. Lewis Cook, still only relatively young in the grand scheme of things. But he brings something different. And likewise, Brooks, who I know you mentioned to me last week against Southampton, didn't have his greatest game, but then again on Saturday shows how good he can be.
Well, there's, you know, we've seen two sides of him in terms of where he's played. We've seen him on left wing, but against Chelsea, Eddie put him in just behind the front two for a while. It was more of we were trying to chase the game and trying to win it. But he opened them up twice and was unlucky not to score with a one-on-one. And he is, again, somebody who's definitely added something to the game. The goals he's scored and the goals he's made, it's very heartwarming. When you have players like that in your team, you know, and we've had it done to us over the last three seasons, the top teams have special ones that could do something in a moment, a free kick or something, bit of individual flair, and it changes the whole game round. And we feel, certainly in Callum, Fraser, Brooksy and Kingy, we've got players there that if you know, you're really going to have to be on your toes when you come up against these lads.
John, it'd be wrong, and I think in the media sometimes we're guilty of just focusing on the new signings, the new shiny toy, if you like. So it would be wrong not to mention the likes of Daniels, Cook, Francis, these players, Surman, that have been there for many years, that do provide a real security, and they also provide an environment, I'm sure, without knowing the ins and outs of it, that the likes of Lerma, the likes of Brooks can come into, and it's just very stable. I think they've been such solid citizens for the club, haven't they, over the last few years?
They've been the lifeblood of the club. Harry Arter should be included in that as well. These boys have been the mainstay. Eddie's built it all around them. And, you know, you know yourself, when you're playing in teams that it's going well, the team spirit gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think they definitely have helped. Rico has come in and last night had a better game, but I think there's still a lot more to come from him at left wing back. But as you say, these lads are the lifeblood of the club, and they've held it all together. And I'm sure they do make people very welcome when they come in, because, you know, when you have the sort of environment where everybody, you can't wait to get to work, you've got a real chance of picking up some good results.
So is the plan this year, John, is it let's emulate what Burnley did last year? They've proved what can be done in a fairly small but together squad, good manager in charge with a real vision, the way he wants to play. And I've also touched on it, maybe a nice little cup run.
Now, this is my vision of it. This is how I would think. I can't vouch for Eddie because he might have different plans, but the way I see it, first thing is get to 40 points as quick as we can. After that, get to the best league position we can. After that, if we can stay in the cups a little bit further, a little bit longer down the road, that would be fantastic. But that would be a real bonus. 40 points and our highest league would be the way I would look at it.
Yeah. John, listen, it's a club that I like. I've enjoyed going there. I enjoy the way he's played, the way he's conducted your business. Can only wish you the best for the coming season. Hopefully see you at a game soon, pal.
Will do. Thank you very
Cheers,
much.
Cheers, John. That was John Williams, really nice fella. Bumped into him at the press lounge on Saturday at Fulham. Seen him a few times, so it was nice to speak to him, nice to get him on and give us a little flavour of, I suppose, what has been one of the surprise teams of the Premier League this year. But that is all we've got time for this week. As per usual, Keith Andrews Show is available to download on all the usual platforms. We shall see you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
After that, if we can stay in the cups a little bit further, a little bit longer down the road, that would be fantastic. But that would be a real bonus. 40 points and our highest league would be the way I would look at it.
Yeah. John, listen, it's a club that I like. I've enjoyed going there. I enjoy the way you've played, the way you've conducted your business. Can only wish you the best for the coming season. Hopefully see you at a game soon, pal.
Will do. Thank you very
Cheers,
much.
Cheers, John. So that was John Williams, really nice fella. Bumped into him at the press lounge on Saturday at Fulham. Seen him a few times, so it was nice to speak to him, nice to get him on and give us a little flavour of, I suppose, what has been one of the surprise teams of the Premier League this year. But that is all we've got time for this week. As per usual, Keith Andrews Show is available to download on all the usual platforms. We shall see you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.